Today's guest on Medio Scientific's The Business of LoRaWAN is Michael Angeloff, a seasoned telecom veteran turned IoT entrepreneur who spent more than two decades building networks, both the technical kind and the business kind. Michael began his career at Nokia, where he spent 19 years helping shape global telecom infrastructure and co-founded the worldwide IoT network grid, what many in the industry recognize as one of Nokia's boldest plays in IoT connectivity. He holds multiple patents from his time leading IoT innovation in smart lighting and connectivity platforms, and has long been at the bleeding edge of machine-to-machine communication. What makes Michael especially relevant to this audience is his pivot from big telecom to founding IoTnet.eu, where he's solving very real, very local problems, starting with water. As he puts it, after air, water's the next most essential thing. And yet in many places, 40 to 70% of it never makes it from the source to the tap. That's a lot of loss. Some from leaks, some from theft, all from lack of data. Michael's company now manages over 40,000 connected water meters across Bulgaria, using LoRaWAN to gather millions of data points per month. What began as a connectivity play turned into a full-stack analytics business, driven by necessity and the realization that utilities didn't just want networks, they wanted solutions. In this episode, you'll hear how IoTNet evolved, how they leverage the Helium network to scale without overspending on infrastructure, and how Michael sees the future of water utilities, not just as data gatherers, but as AI-powered systems that can predict leaks, prevent outages, and serve communities more efficiently. Let's dig in. We are back with Michael from IoTNet.eu, and we've got a bunch of questions for you about LoRaWAN, although it's pretty interesting that you've been doing this IoT thing for over 20 years, so it's not like you just found this and you're like, oh, I'll check this out. Let's start with, when you're looking at IoT connectivity, is there any kind of big problem that you see out there that is unsolved? Or are all the problems on the technical side for communications more or less solved, and now it's just implementation and working the business side?
Yes, first, thank you, Nick, for having me back, or let's say for having me in this context. I do appreciate that we're talking about tangible business and things that everybody can actually try and see with themselves. And what brought me into the water space is that water is one of those funny things that everybody needs to have it. I think without water, you die quite soon, right? After air, I guess water is the second most needed thing.
Pretty important, yeah.
Pretty important. Also, water is non-renewable. This is funny, right? So if you destroy your water supplies in an area, this is quite bad, right? So water is actually quite an interesting utility per se, right? You can probably generate more electricity, you know, you can probably air, you can clean it up a bit. But if water disappears from your environment, it's difficult to bring it back. And there have been some cases in the world that even the rivers have, the flow of the river has been turned the other way around. And this, of course, destroyed a lot of communities, maybe generated value in some other communities. But in general, water is actually quite interesting. And exciting part was that water utility, where everything to do with fluid, was the best use case that I found for the low power wide area network that I've been studying probably for the last 10 years now. And why this was so? Because this is actually one of the areas which was probably most disrupted by the proliferation of the Internet of Things technologies. Because everything else which has access to power, so main type of power, you can attach sensors and probably could have access to other type of connectivity technology that uses the power. And just to put it in context, you could put a GSM modem, but GSM modem could use a lot of power. So on a battery, it can survive limited time. But the moment that you start to talk about low power wide area network, then you can talk about use cases that you don't have to visit the device to change the battery for 5-10 years, potentially even more if you have photovoltaics. And that's why the fluid management, or everything to do with area where you don't have electricity, constant power supply became possible. And before that, it was just not possible. So that's why main water meters, even water meters, were never monitored centrally, because it was impossible to connect them in a sustainable way, meaning that you don't have to visit it every year or every couple of months, because this is very expensive. And the fact that you could connect now water meters and gas and all kind of other sensors, but let's stick to the water meter. The fact that you can connect water meter with a sensor, and this enables the real-time collection of data from that water meter and the sensors, and then you can have a sustainable use case, because you could always have a service level agreement that means that this can last for 10 years on a traffic profile that enables you to do real use cases became a big enablement. And enablement means that you could deliver a system, you could actually maintain it, and all the parties would have their own value. So the utility would have reliable access to data, the supplier or the system integrator would have an actual business case, producers of devices would have a reasonable profit margin. So everybody along the value chain actually found the product market fit. And this is what happened about 10 years ago with the low power wider network. So the first one that failed miserably was Sigfox. So I was not interested in that because this was proprietary. And then came LoRaWAN. And the funny thing was that it was even open source, so basically open for everybody to use it. And regulators made the license available and it just worked. And that for me was actually very exciting. So that's why how I got started in the whole space and how I started exploring all the options and ultimately led to the business that we can discuss in more detail now. So, but I'll pause here because I was just rambling for a couple of minutes.
Yeah, no, it's interesting. And for folks that are listening, you've got this background, 19 years at Nokia or Nokia, however you say it.
Nokia, yes.
And then you've invented a couple things in this smart street lighting arena. And then you're running this business, this IoTnet.eu, all throughout Bulgaria, not just Sofia, that is doing the smart water metering piece. So you've got this kind of business and, you know, technician nerd background. So you understand kind of how the things work and then how the business works.
Yes.
One of the big things with an IoT business is it's a lot of us nerds who are really excited about getting something to work, but not so good at getting the business. Can you walk me through how you get new business? Are you walking into City Hall and saying, hey, I've got this cool water meter thing? Is it all relationships with people you already knew in Sofia because you're Bulgarian? Yeah, what are the ways you get new business?
Yeah, good point. So actually, my journey in the IoTnet, of course, is a classical journey of a startup, right? You actually have an idea and you start with something and then you have to pivot to where you found product market fit. So the story of IoTnet was that I knew that there is a market niche that lies in the fact that you can create a nationwide communication network dedicated to Internet of Things devices without having the full cost burden which traditional mobile networks have. And that's the story of disruption, because you could use unlicensed spectrum, you could use very low-cost equipment. Because the equipment is small and the spectrum is free, you could use different type of permits to be able to install the equipment. And then you have completely different cost base, not like in telecom cost base, but which is like enterprise or almost like Wi-Fi type of cost base to maintain the equipment. And this got us thinking, so together with the co-founder, that why don't we do this for the first time in actually to the whole Central East Europe and we established a nationwide network in Bulgaria. And then we were thinking that, wow, it's so compelling the offer that, of course, everybody will buy, you know, connectivity from us. You know, there's just no question there. And of course, what happens is that when market beat you to the punch, then you have to change your mind, right? Everybody has a plan until they punch in the face. Quote from Mike Tyson, right?
So
I mean, we had a plan, but then it didn't work out because nobody was interested to buy only the connectivity, even though they understood the value. But enterprises, especially utilities or any other that we talked about, were not interested to just buy connectivity and to do the heavy integration themselves. So actually, after a couple of attempts and basically more than a year or so in just doing connectivity, we realized that this is not enough and we had to provide end-to-end solution business in segment that there is a paying customer, not just a hobby. Because in the IoT space, Internet of Things, you can spend all your productive time just doing proof of concept, paid, non-paid or hobby type of work. And a lot of time has been perished there. So we have to actually find something that pays the bills and creates value. And this is actually, we pivoted and from just providing connectivity blanket and waiting for customers to come, then we identified that, hey, let's focus on this segment of the water utility because there is a good fit of product to the requirement. And also there is a good interruption in the status quo that this is needed and this is required. And we did a couple of tests which lasted actually for months. And then we found the fit with the ecosystem, with the actual suppliers of the water meters, with the integration partners, and with the actual customers themselves. And this is how it started. So from just providing LoRaWAN connectivity, then we pivoted towards providing end-to-end solutions for the whole water utility sector or the problems of the water utility sector. And I think that's something to remember for Everybody is curious about IoT. So don't just think about the so-called technology, think about the product market fit. So where this technology would fit and find a paying customer, because otherwise it's not business, it's just hobby, which is still okay, right? I mean, people like to do hobbies, but this would not be a business.
Hobbies are fun.
Yes.
Okay. So when you're at Nokia, you've co-founded this worldwide IoT network grid. So you had the experience of building a connectivity network that was global. But then when you get to this one specific problem, you realize they're not going to use my connectivity. They want the whole thing done for them. Was there an initial like numbers pitch? You know, if you put in this $300 water meter sensor, you're going to save $400 over the course of the next 2 years? Or how did you present that piece of it?
Yeah, so actually the customers had a quite good understanding why they need to do it. In Bulgaria, like most of the places in the world, typically the utility is owned by the municipality, so which is, of course, a public entity. In some places, it's public and private co-owned, because typically private entity has more ambition to develop new services, invest more, while, of course, municipality have a certain restrictions. And what we did, we actually followed the requirements. So in particular market that we work in, the primary use case was not for the consumer water meters, but for the so-called main water meters. So the water meters connecting the main building or a major production facility, so major enterprise customer. So imagine if you talk about any kind of industrial complex, or if you talk about a skyscraper like in New York, or if you talk about any type of condominium. So you typically have a main water meter in the basement that connects the water for the whole building. And this is actually the one that in this particular regulation is owned by the water utility company. And this is the one that they wanted to have it remotely measured, because they see that some of those customers have extra high consumption or extra low for the type of customer that they are. I mean, it's quite unusual if a big production facility or big block of flats have a very low consumption, right? Something is wrong there. And the typical challenge there is to identify what are the areas and what is the reason for that. And most likely, so number one reason is a so-called non-technical loss. Non-technical losses is a funny way to say theft in a lot of languages in the world. And actually, water utility is one of those spaces that when audience or when people think about it, they never realize that in average 40 to 70% of the water is actually lost from the source, from the water reservoir to the actual destination. Of course, some markets can go down to 15%, but 15 to 70 is typically what happens. And this is not only theft, right? This is, of course, also somewhere leaking or something not being accounted for and so forth. And of course, the easiest way to at least understand it is to start measuring it. Because once you start measuring it, then it's quite clear that why in a certain closed loop, you know, a pot of water that you have a main water meter and all the submeters, I mean, they should match, right? If something doesn't match, means that something is somewhere wrong. And the value, of course, for the water utility is actually, they don't care, because if the water is lost, they're still going to give the bill to the end consumer. So, I mean, water utility is like the bank, it never loses. But what they still lose is the extra power needed to pump the water or to distribute the water. This is still an actual loss for them. And that's the main business driver in the water utility space. So basically, they want to prevent spending external or money for external services like power supply. And they want to recover some of that value being shared among the pipelines, so downstream. So basically, what is the water going, what is happening? And of course, along the way, there is all the other use cases that if you have pumping stations, you need to monitor the pressure and the flow of the pumping station. You need to be able to adjust it so that it actually goes in certain thresholds, right? Because if it's above the threshold, the pressure is too high, so it may burst the pipe. If it's too low, then there is not enough pressure. So we have to manage that. Of course, there is a lot of science there, not just art. And a lot of people actually would share much more details of how this is managed. And this is part of a full SCADA system typically. But the disruption here is that you can actually implement sensors in places that previously were no sensors or were very expensive to put sensors. And with that disruption, this is what low power wide area actually hit and became quite an interesting match, at least in our use cases.
And you guys started off by trying to build or building your own network that wasn't something new to you. You've been building networks for your entire career. And then you saw Helium and you said, oh, maybe we can use this as well. And if I'm reading it right, you're actually using Helium across most of the service area that you have. I don't know if that's still true, but can you walk me through that piece of it?
Yeah. So at that time, when we started, of course, the idea was to build our own network for cost benefit and also to have the full control.
Sure.
And we did succeed. I mean, again, we had to rehome network LoRaWAN gateways where we had customers. And then at some point, we started to see, at least I started to see, there is a bit too much noise in the network increasing. So areas that were connected before had trouble connecting, especially during the joint procedure. And this got me thinking, what the hell is happening? And then we start to hearing from some landlord, oh, you're here mining. I said, what the fuck are you doing? Like, here's my French. Mining what? And then I realized that I checked around because I had some experience with it mining myself, right? Running some GPU rigs, I think 2016, you know, some RX 580s.
Okay.
So at least I was familiar with the concept, but then I didn't know that you could even use this concept for wireless. So I was like, what is happening here? And then I discovered the Helium network. I was like, what a brilliant idea. I mean, I was really astonished that you could build the biggest, at some point it reached 1 million nodes type of a network around the world. You could build this huge network and you can provide the real service without investing in infrastructure, without investing in implementation services, without investing in maintenance services, and you could still earn money with every single installation. This was like, wow, what a fantastic business model, because it was tried before, right? The Things network was exactly like this. It was a crowdsourced community network and nothing, right? It had been there for years. It didn't go to any major development. And here comes the new kid on the block and out of nowhere manages to build the largest network in a couple of, I think, 2 years, even less. And then at some point, even destroy the whole global supply chain of LoRaWAN gateways. It's almost impossible to buy a gateway because all the facilities were just pumping Helium miners. And it's like crazy. I mean, really crazy. But the good part of the craziness is that when the network was there and running, especially in our case in Sofia, we could have at some point a couple of thousand gateways active running. And in whole Bulgaria, it was like tens of thousands. And if you have to think that you have to invest €1,000 for an enterprise-grade gateway, and you had to put a couple of hundred euros for installation, and you had to put a couple of hundred per year for maintenance, if you had to put ourselves these tens of thousands of gateways across Bulgaria, this would have been cost prohibitive, right? And to make it even sweeter, I mean, in the beginning, the Helium connectivity was very, very cheap. So, I mean, cheap means didn't make any sense from any kind of economics point of view because there is no way how the connectivity fee was paying the cost. But still, it was there. And after some tests that we ran out, we realized that, wow, in the places that we lack coverage, we can actually migrate some of our device to use Helium, then it's tending, or instead of trying to put ourselves coverage there, and then we can use Helium as a fantastic capacity cushion and as an extension of our coverage. And this is what we did. So now we're actually using it and it works quite well. Of course, with the caveat that we need to build very strong capabilities to move devices between networks to make sure that if a Helium miner goes down or something happens in the future, we can still have a capability to deliver services to our customers.
Got it. Okay. And I know that's one of the big concerns. This show, of course, is sponsored by Helium, although I wanted to make sure it was a LoRaWAN first show, but definitely one of the concerns I hear about Helium is how do I make sure the connectivity stays where it is and that some homeowner doesn't turn their gateway off or move or whatever. But it sounds like with the background you've got on the telco side, that's not a particularly difficult problem for you to solve as far as like, all right, if this sensor doesn't get Helium connectivity, cool, I'll provide it some other way, whether that's with another LoRaWAN or LTE or however you're doing it.
No, it's still a lot of fun. So we still keep our own gateways running and we have a separate LNS that we use for that.
Okay.
On the application server and the devices, we take care of switching between the networks if you see that one of them is not available. And I think that's probably a good way to do it. So.
Yeah. I mean, it's fantastic to have the redundancy. Okay. And then you've built out this network across Bulgaria. I don't think we've talked the numbers. Is there a number of sensors? I think you said you started off with 30 gateways. But certainly that's not enough to cover the whole thing.
We have much more gateways ourselves. So we have more than 200 fully operational. We switch gateways when we have to switch around.
And then how many water meters? It's a couple thousand, right?
No, we have more than 40,000.
40,000, okay. So it's a legit, this is not like a pilot project where like, hey, this works and I got five of them pinging.
Yeah, I mean, we became the first enterprise customer for Helium in Europe. with this network. So, I mean, it probably shows the volume here. And when we had to migrate because they discontinued the Evernest last year, it was quite a painful exercise.
Yeah.
To make sure that all these sensors are migrated without discontinuation of service. So, I mean, luckily it was possible. Maybe not luckily, but good that they designed it to be possible. But of course, this is a concern. So I love the service. I don't like the uncertainty of the service. I still believe this is a great way to create networks, to use the community capabilities and the interest of community to maintain and to make this happen. And I think LoRaWAN is probably the best technology to enable this to happen globally, because it is globally available, right? So I do want to encourage everybody to keep the Helium IoT miner up and running, because it is creating real value and it is helping solve real issues. So please keep on running.
Especially in Bulgaria, right?
Yeah, well, especially, yes. Sir.
And then what's next for you in the world of IoT and LoRaWAN? Are you going to go back to these customers you already have and say, hey, let's put some more sensors in? What do you see in the future of the IoT net company?
Yes, we want to continue to be the leader in the, not just the automated meter reading, as it's called, the AMR, but also the analytics. Because now in the age of AI, you already have data for 6 years and counting, right? And you can imagine this is a lot of contextual data that we can already create value for our customer. So actually, that's why we are thinking ourselves as water analytics, not just the AMR type of system.
Oh, interesting. I want to make sure we pause a little bit on that. So you're seeing what I kind of suspected as an outsider, non-technical person, is that because you've got all of these data points, you can now start feeding them into an AI and say, hey, what else can we learn? Is that the kind of broad strokes idea here, or am I missing something important?
I mean, yeah, our data is structured data, right?
Yeah.
It already has labels, it already has context. So what better than to use an AI system to make even more data of it? Because typically, and most likely the biggest issue of any water utility is that when is something going to go wrong? So by analyzing water flow, we can deduct other type of technical parameters from the network. And most likely we can even predict when an accident or incident is going to happen, or even when technical losses, non-technical losses will be there. So, and this could be a lot of money saved and a lot of services being delivered. I mean, communities hate when there is a water burst somewhere or pipe burst and they're left without water, right? So that's actually something quite interesting that probably we can do. And you asked me what you want to do. So we're going to continue providing good services in Bulgaria, of course. We also expanding, or we have capability to do also different type of water analytics, not just for the utilities, but also for open paths like rivers, like reservoirs, water reservoirs, and so forth. And then, of course, we would love to discuss with any potential integrator of the Helium community, how we can bring this battle test technology in the world. So, I mean, the whole system is replicable. Now with the Helium connectivity, we don't need to do anything local, right? We can just ship the sensor. We can deliver a cloud access to the software, and a local system integrator can just go and do the sale and potentially replicate what you have done anywhere else in the world. And I think that's the biggest and the most interesting part that I see in the collaboration with the Helium community. So let's just take it. I mean, happy to connect to any local integrator that may need to have the system and to make it happen in your local community.
Oh, nice. So someone listening to this that is running a small or whatever IoT business in their area might hear this and say, cool, this guy's got basically like a business in a box that I can take to my local city, unpack, and I already know the sensors work, I already know the system works. Maybe I do some field testing to check signal in my area and deploy extra gateways as needed. But more or less, the single biggest obstacle for this particular business model will be the connection with the local government officials who will say yes or no, the local water officials will say yes or no to this. But it sounds like the numbers are there where you can show them, hey, when you do this, this is how much you save from theft or from whatever. From, I like the non-technical losses. That's good.
Yeah, it's a non-technical. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I mean, talking about communities, that would be the best way to happen, right? So let's connect. I think the challenge is, of course, to have the relationship with your local municipality that they can trust you that you deliver the job. But with our references and with somebody potentially locally having access to any other type of segment or even just deploying Helium gateways, right? They can say, yeah, we have done this and we have this partner that can deliver this technology, and we are the local integrator. So we're the system to choke. And of course, the cost proposition is there, or the benefit, right? Because we can deliver anything that the iTrons of the world, the Landis and Giro whoever of the big guys can deliver the fraction of the cost, which ultimately benefits the you as a community, right? Because if you're using your water, which typically you should be, if you're part of it, why should you pay? Like, why should the cost be extraordinarily high on the typical, proprietary system, if you can even make the whole thing run as a service for the community, by the community? So, okay, almost sounds too political here, but...
No, it's good. It's super cool. And I think it's a nice call to action at the end of this. Michael, I know you're super busy. You got a couple companies you're running. I really appreciate you coming on and taking the time to share parts of your LoRaWAN journey and experience with us. Thanks, man.
Thanks, Nick. Appreciate it.
That's it for this episode of The Business of LoRaWAN. I built this for you, the one person in about 100,000 who actually has an interest in how this tiny little slice of the world works. Of course, this isn't just about you and me, it's about everyone in LoRaWAN and how we can work together to make an exceptional thing. LoRaWAN is a dispersed community with little pockets of knowledge all around the world, and most of them don't talk to each other as much as I'd like. So the first and best thing we can do to make this show better is to get more guests on who I don't even know exist. I want to talk to strangers. Strangers who are your friends. Please introduce me to the most rad LoRaWANer you know, or point them my way, or help reach out and give me a name. When it comes to running down LoRaWAN guests, I can track a falcon on a cloudy day. If you can remember metsci.show, you can find me. That's metsci.show. metsci.show. Okay, so sharing knowledge by getting great guests on is the first and by far the most important thing we can do to make this better. The next best thing for the show to do is the usual stuff. Subscribe to the show, give it a review, share it in your corner of the world. Again, that's metsci.show. Finally, if you want to support the show financially, you can do that over at support.metsci.show. You'll see options there for one-time donations if you really like this show, as well as an ongoing subscription option if you think this show is worth supporting for the long term. If you want to try LoRaWAN for yourself, sign up for a Medio Scientific account at console.medioscientific.com and get your first 400 data credits for free. That's enough to run a sensor for about a year if you're firing every hour. The show is supported by a grant from the Helium Foundation and produced by Gristle King, Inc. I'm Nick Hawks. I'll see you on the next show.